Oddnuts Daily is brought to you by Super Anti Spyware. Remove all the spyware, not just the easy ones, at superantispyware.com. And also the Podnuts Tech Website Builder. Build a Podnuts endorsed computer repair business website today at techsitebuilder.com. Welcome to Podnuts Daily, episode number 263. Podnuts Daily is a show about computer repair. We have a computer repair technician or somebody who works in the computer field come on the show each show and go over tips and tricks and techniques that they're using in the field and hopefully help you guys out there that are also confronting all kinds of computer problems. So let's get right into it here. Joining us for as my guest for this show is Jim Beeson, calling from Houston, Texas. What's going on, Jim?
Just hot down here, Steve. How you doing?
I'll bet it's hot. And then I made you turn off your air conditioning and everything. Wow.
Yeah. Well, we got the air conditioning back on. I can deal without the ceiling fan.
Okay, good.
But hey, you're going to be dealing with just heat just like this here next summer.
I know. Everybody tells me it's going to be so hot in Florida and the humidity and people die when they go outside. I'm ready for it all, I think.
Well, it's not that bad. I moved here 20 years ago from the desert, and the first summer I was here, they told me just drink lots of water, but I always did that anyway, so I did fine. So you don't have much to worry about.
Thank you. First person to say that. All right. So what do you do, Jim?
I work for a local fast food chain franchise. We have 55 units in our franchise. I started off as doing actually new store construction, but I also got into IT, infrastructure support, supporting the installation of our POS systems and other systems internal that we use for communications, phone systems, that sort of thing.
Oh, cool. All right, this is a new slant on the computer repair. So, what did you want to bring? What did you want to go over today?
Well, yeah, I'm gonna try to bring to the table some things that maybe people hadn't thought about in the past, and that sort of thing.
Sure.
And I actually have been working on an outline for the last 3-4 weeks or so, stuff I wanted to bring to the table, and I realized about an hour and a half ago I left it at home.
Oh, man.
So I had to do this kind of from memory, but I think I got it pretty much together.
Man. You know what? That's why I put everything in the cloud. I love the cloud.
I'm working on that, but I'm on the road all the time. In the last 3 years, I have driven over 120,000 miles. So I have to do a lot of writing on form, you know, on paper and stuff. So
you got to get a smartphone and just Google Docs it or something.
Well, I'm working toward that.
Okay. I won't give you a hard time.
Well, you can give me a hard time. I'll give it right back to you. But
I bet you will.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'm going to start off by kind of, you know, talking about how I actually come to this point of coming on your show and everything. And I decided a few years ago that I wanted to expand my horizons. My job, I like to think I'm very good at, but it's very niche. You know, I do certain things in my job. So I said, okay, I want to learn more about things. So one of the first things I decided to do is, and we're going to talk about a little bit about A+ certifications. And I decided I wanted to work on A+ certification, not because I think I need the certification, but because I wanted to use that as a outline to see where I was strong at and where I was weak at. And so I'm finding that to be a very good, a very good outline.
You mean kind of like taking the test before you study to see what you need work with, or just trying to go through the course?
Just go through the course.
Okay.
You know, go through the books and that sort of thing. So it led me back to joining a local users group that I'd actually joined in 2001 and let the membership lapse. It's called HowPC. How stands for Houston Area League of PC Users. And www.how-pc.org. And I'd like to encourage, this is a plug, I would like to encourage anybody in the Houston area that, you know, would like to learn more about computers, you know, to come by and join. All the address information is on the website. It's a $50 per year membership fee, and you can get a lot of benefit from joining if you're in the Houston area.
How did it go with the group?
Well, I'm still with the group. I joined a SIG, a special interest group, that is dedicated to A+ learning and trying to, you know, prepare for the A+ exam. I've been with that SIG for a couple of years. I'm currently one of the 3 SIG leaders, though I don't have to do as much as I did in the past because I've gotten much busier and a couple of other people have stepped up and done more with it. So, you know, we do what's called hands-on, you know, tearing computers down, putting them back together. I don't do a whole lot of that. I let them do it because I've torn plenty of computers down, put them back together and over over the years.
Right.
And then we, you know, we work on doing tests and stuff like that, self-testing, see where we're at and watch videos and stuff. And one of the things that we came across in trying to find good videos to watch is an online source called, and the gentleman's name is Professor James Messer. His website is www.freeaplus, and you spell out plus, so A-P-L-U-S, so freeaplus.com. He's got a bunch of very good videos, 15, 20-minute videos that covers many aspects of the A-plus exam. They're free to watch online. You can watch them as much as you want to, and it's a great resource, not only for people that want to take the A-plus exam, but just people that want to learn more.
Oh, that's great. I think we, this looks familiar to me for some reason. Maybe somebody else brought it up, but I can't remember.
Well, it was brought up on the Mike Tech Show recently.
Okay. Okay.
So that may have been where you saw it.
Probably.
At. So, yeah. And see, that's the other area that I have really gotten into is podcasts. And, you know, Mike Tech Show, let's face it, Mike Smith is the godfather. You know, he is. And he was probably the first podcast that I started listening to, and it's from his show that I found your show, you know, found Pod Nuts and Pod Nuts Daily. And of course I've subscribed to most of your podcasts. I don't subscribe to Nuts at Night, but I will listen to it, you know, if I'm sitting in the office, not doing a whole lot, but you know, I subscribe to all the other ones, you know, download them to my MP3 player. Like I told you, I drive a lot. So, and I am so sick of Top 40 radio, of talk radio, of sports talk. I'm sick of all of it.
I know. You know what? Thank God for that stuff. If it wasn't for that stuff, then nobody would listen to us.
Yeah.
Mike Smith, I'm glad I hooked up with him too. He's a great person to have as a contact and to do podcasting with. A great guy, knowledgeable, fun. So yeah, he's got a great show.
Yeah. And one of the things in my search for more podcasts to listen to, it really strikes me, is that I find more what I consider good podcasts that I like based, you know, roughly in the Philadelphia area than in most other areas of the country. And that really strikes me as odd. Maybe I'm not looking in the right places. You know, I listen to Techie Geek a lot and, you know, Linux for the Rest of Us.
It's a shame. You're starting to make me feel bad now. I'm moving. Well, I don't want to leave the podcasting capital of the world here.
Hey, well, that's okay. You can take your talents down to Florida and maybe get going with it. But one podcast that I found that is based in Texas that I think is very good, and it's a fairly new podcast, but they're doing a really good job already. It's something called the Tightwad Tech. It's a couple guys that work for a school district. And so as working for a school district, they have to stretch the dollar as far as they can. So they talk about a lot of things that they do to stretch that dollar.
Tightwad Tech. Do you have a website?
TheTightwadTech.com, I think is what it is.
Okay, I'm going to check it out.
Yeah, but I've been very pleased with that one. Cool. Now, if you don't mind, I'm going to go on a minor rant here for a minute.
Do it.
Okay, Mind of Root is one of my favorite shows, even though it's a little over my head.
Yes.
You know, I like what Keith Albright and his cohorts do. But as you know, they were off the air for a couple of months, and life got in the way, and I knew that and everything. And so I'd check back periodically on their website, and I'd see some posts from people there like, well, if you're not going to podcast anymore, you know, don't leave us hanging. Tell us what you're going to do. You know, podcasters are obligated to tell the folks what's going on. You know, we don't know what's going on in y'all's lives. And it was a pain for me just to find the time to, you know, come on to your show one day for an hour or two. I mean, I can only imagine what it must be like for people that are working full-time gigs, you know, trying to find the time once a week or once every 2 weeks to do this.
With families and kids and everything else going on.
Yeah. Exactly. And I don't know if you remember, but I sent you a tweet a few weeks back when you were in Tampa and, you know, you had a Wednesday slot that appeared to be open. And I actually thought, okay, I've got some time. If he doesn't have anybody, I can slip in. And then you sent me a message back. Oh, I'm in Tampa. I don't know if you remember that message or not.
Yeah, I do. Sorry about that.
No, that's fine. That's fine. As luck would have it, I got a call right after I got your message. One of my granddaughters was taken to the hospital because she, hurt her foot. So I would have had to call you back and said, dude, got to cancel, you know? So
okay. I guess it did work out, but that's not very pleasant.
But I mean, that's an example. Life right. gets in the way. Right. So,
you know, Keith was one of their Philly Tech guys. We used to do the show with Keith.
Yes. But,
yeah. And, you know, I like Mind of Root too. That's one of the first shows I considered actually asking Keith if he wanted to be on the Podnuts network with that show, because I like the quality of that show.
Yeah. So,
I have to hook up back with Keith and get in touch with him. He's a good guy.
Yeah, he is. He is. So anyway, that's kind of where I'm at as far as learning and that sort of thing.
Cool.
Now, before we go much further, got a couple of unlikely shout outs, and one of them will blow you away. One of them is Comcast. I like Comcast Business Services.
Okay.
Let me be specific. Business Services.
Right.
I've seen a couple of Comcast home services that I wouldn't give you 10 cents for. But I've had very good luck with Comcast Business Services, and I think sometimes we need to give shout outs to, you know, people when they do good.
Right.
And since Comcast does good so little, they need all the help they can get.
Okay. I guess they do need help. You know, I have to say though, because when I was having problems with my connection, people said, why don't you just get Comcast Business? So I actually called Comcast Business, and I was like, I was willing to pay them to be my service. And they basically told me, look, you're not going to get any more bandwidth or any more speed when you use Business. So they talked me out of it, basically.
Yeah. Yeah. But then they turned around and gave you the caps, which you wouldn't have gotten with Business. So gives, right?
You know, it's, you know what? My problem, the caps doesn't really bother me for the podcasting. I need upload bandwidth. That is what I need. And I'm one of the few people that need upload bandwidth because everybody wants to download things. I want to upload things. I need to broadcast live from the web. Yeah. So when I do move down to Florida, I have a 25 gig upload connection waiting for me on Fios. So we'll give Verizon a shot. Not that they're my favorite company, but it's got to be better than this. But I won't take away from your props for Comcast.
Yeah. And I would have Comcast before I would have Verizon in my area. But I think sometimes it depends on the area too.
Yeah.
And sometimes they're better than others. The other shout out is Adobe for one thing that they do. Recently we had a lady that left for a better job opportunity, and her duties were shifted to another office. And I had recently bought a copy of Adobe Acrobat Professional 9.0. And we didn't want to buy another copy of that software because it's $600. So, but Adobe has a neat thing that I wish Microsoft would do. If you want to move an Adobe product that is activated, before you uninstall it from a computer, they have a option to deactivate it.
Oh, cool.
You go in and you deactivate it, and they say, if you want to move this software to another computer, you can deactivate. You deactivate it, move to another computer. You know, no problem with reactivating.
Is that why you're giving Adobe props?
Yeah, I wish Microsoft would do that.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it'd be great to be able to move a retail copy of Windows 7 or a copy of Office 2010, you know, to another computer if you determine you need to do that.
Right.
So anyway, there's my shout out.
Now you're giving shout outs to people who I consider are moving to the dark side.
Well, hey, I understand this, but you know, if somebody does something right, you got to give them a shout out. You know, remember I told you I work in the restaurant business primarily, and I used to run a restaurant, and oftentimes I heard the bad things and never heard the good things. And if you don't tell somebody you're doing a good job, then, you know, occasionally, you know, you should do that. So
good point.
So anyway, and you might, have you found in Tampa, have you found your Micro Center yet? Or are they not there?
Not there.
Oh, man.
It's okay because, you know, there's a CompUSA who was recently bought out by Tiger Direct. So it's pretty Micro Center-like, the CompUSA. Yeah, I've been in there in the Tampa CompUSA, and it's like Tiger. It's like walking into a Tiger Direct catalog.
I'll have to go there because there's a CompUSA on I-10 here in Houston that I keep seeing. But I've got three Fries and a Micro Center here. So.
Oh, you're lucky.
Oh, yeah, man. It's great going into Fries.
Oh, man. I've never been into a Fries.
You got to go in there, man. That's Micro Center on roids.
Wow. Okay. I will. I'm going to make it. I'll definitely make it a mission to do that.
All right. Well,
by the way, Jim, when I said Verizon, I said I had a 25 gigabyte line waiting for me. No, it's 25 megabytes. So if anybody did hear that wrong. Okay. Just wanted to clear that up. Okay. Go ahead.
Let us know when you get that 25 gig line. We'll all be partying.
I'll invite you all down.
There you go. So I'm going to go into some job experience that I've had, you know, and some of the things I've come across. And a couple of these I'm going to talk about are actually side jobs that I've done. I had this lady brought me her computer one day, and she got a blue screen of death. And so I'm looking at it, and it said that the SAM file was corrupted. Now, the SAM file is one of the Windows registry files.
Okay.
So now I'm sure, knowing what I know now, that I probably could have done a Windows restore, you know, any number of things I could have done from the Windows disk. But I decided, let's try this. And I put in my Slacks Live CD.
Slacks Live?
Slacks Live. And I like to use Slacks. Now, I've used Nopix, and I've used Ubuntu, and I haven't found a Linux distro yet that I don't like. But I like Slacks for a couple of reasons.
How do you spell Slacks?
S-L-A-X.
Okay.
Yeah. The biggest reason I like Slacks is that if you've got at least 300 meg of memory, it will load into memory, and you don't have to run it from the CD.
Really?
Yes. So, and I can also use it as kind of an additional memory test. I'll run memtest 86 first, and if it comes back, then I'll see if Slacks will load, because it's going to take up a lot of memory.
Wow. This looks pretty cool. What, do you put it on a flash drive? Or?
I've got it on a CD. It'll fit on a CD.
And you just put that in, and it installs it to the RAM.
Yes. It'll copy everything to RAM if it's got enough RAM, and then launches. And you can still see the hard drive from there.
And it's fast, I'm gathering, right? Super fast?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because you're not having the seek time back to the CD drive.
Wow, this is neat, man. Good call.
Yeah. So using that, and went into the system restore folder, and I just grabbed a recent copy. In that case, I grabbed a recent copy of the SAM file, copied it back over into the Windows System 32 config folder, I think is where it goes, and was able to launch the machine. And I didn't expect it to be perfect. I just needed to get into the machine so I could, you know, clean it with the typical tools and everything. And so I found that to be a good way to do it. And you can't do it with Ultimate Boot CD for Windows, because it still locks those folders. You have to have a Linux distro of some sort in order to do that type of repair.
Really?
Yes. Yes. Because I tried it with an Ultimate Boot CD for Windows just out of curiosity, and you cannot access, you know, what is it, the system volume information folder is where it's at.
I'm trying to think if I did this on Ultimate Boot CD. I guess I couldn't. But the Ultimate Boot CD for Win has a cool program called Registry Restore Wizard, which would copy the SAM, but it would also copy the other four files over too.
Yeah. And like I said, that was before I even heard of the Ultimate Boot CD for Windows. Right. So this is
a great tool, and I like that it's really fast. That's the key thing, because Ultimate Boot CD takes a while to load. If this boots up fast, this is a killer.
Yeah. Yeah, it boots. You know, it takes a little while to boot up. It's more the speed of it once it boots up.
Right. Okay.
So I found that very useful. So that's how I did that one. And then the same lady brought her computer back to me a couple of months later. And it acted like that the power supply was going bad. It would boot up, and then it'd shut down. Stay booted for a little while longer, then shut down. And she even told me sometimes it would boot up when she wasn't doing anything. She'd just be in her room or in bed, because she kept it in her bedroom, and it would boot up by itself at night.
That's probably pretty freaky.
Oh, it was pretty freaky for her. She was wondering, but she gets freaked out kind of easily, because as an aside, I put the sysinternals screensaver on her computer one time at work, you know, the blue screen of death screensaver.
Yeah.
And she'd come, oh, it's blue screening. So I'd go up there and I'd move the mouse, and then I'd do some stuff. Well, it's working fine. I don't know what your problem is. So she'd work for a while, and I'd have that thing set for, you know, come on 10 minutes. So, but she'd work for 30 minutes or 40, and then get up and go have a coffee or something, come back and it blue screen again. You know,
so, and all she had to do is move the mouse to get it off.
Well, but she wouldn't move the mouse. She'd be scared. Right, she'd come get me, and I'd go fix it.
That's pretty funny.
But she brought it to me, and I was thinking at first it was power supply too. And, but on a lark, I took an old power switch that I'd pulled out of another computer, and I plugged it into the motherboard, and it came on perfectly.
Wait, an old power switch? You mean like the little clicker switch?
Yeah, just a little clicker switch. You know, I just harvested it from a computer that was bad, plugged it into the motherboard, and it was fine. So now, this machine is an eMachines machine.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And it was about 2 months before warranty was out, but I didn't want to send the thing back for a power switch. So I get on the phone with eMachine support, or actually it was a, it was a chat, text chat. Mm-hmm. So I'm talking to this guy and I said, okay, I need a power switch. I'll pay for it. I'll pay for shipping. That's all I need is a power switch. Computer works fine. Well, we show that there's still 3 months worth of warranty on it or whatever it was. And we'll be more than happy to take a look at it and fix everything. And no, I don't want to do this. I want a power switch. What's so hard about this? I must have been on chat with this guy for 30, 40 minutes. And I could not seem to get him to see. All I need is a bleeping power switch. What's so hard about this?
How did that end up? Did he finally give you one?
Nope. What I wound up doing is I went to a local vendor and I bought a cheap case and I moved the whole, motherboard and all into the new case.
Really?
Yeah.
Look, so, I've replaced power switches before. They sell a nice little bag of them at Micro Center.
Mm-hmm. Well, this one was proprietary to eMachines, though.
Are you sure about that?
Well, I seem to remember it was. It might not have been.
They have, there's that square little button, and it's behind, obviously it's kind of embedded into the case, but you just, unclick the little latches that keep it in there, and it should be a little square one with a switch on it.
Yeah.
Because Micro Center sells a bag of, all those little wires that go to that spot on the motherboard, like the LEDs and the switches, they sell a little bag of that. I'm just saying for future reference. I'm not saying you should have known this, but because I replaced them too. But
hey, well, that's what the show's all about, is figuring out what everybody else can offer. I will look into that. Yeah. So, but it turned out pretty good because the case I got her has a handle on. So every time one of her kids puts malware on it, she can just pick it up by the handle and bring it to me a suitcase.
That's a great idea. That's a great idea.
So,
hey,
so
no, it's actually amazing to me that was the problem. I mean, that, rarely do they flake out that bad where they're just on the verge of going on and off.
Yeah, I know. And especially when it was coming on for her in the middle of the night for no apparent reason. That was the most bizarre part about that. So
weird.
So anyway, that's that lady's computer. I had another colleague that got with me one time and she wanted me to see if I could get her computer to not freeze up when she was on a particular website. Okay. So she brings me this computer, and what it is, it's an old workstation. It's got Windows 2000 on it. She's got some antivirus software that she still is getting updates from. It's a Norton, but it's a Norton Enterprise Edition antivirus software. I don't know how, and this thing's like from 2003, 2004. Right. I don't know how it's still working.
Right.
And I start looking at it and, do the normal cleaning and stuff. And I had it had 256K of RAM, or 256 meg, I'm sorry. 256 meg. I was able to up it to 700 and something because I had some RAM lying around that I could put in there and make it work, but still wasn't very much. And then I'm looking to update her Microsoft Office, and it comes back with this message saying this copy of Office is not legal.
Oh man.
Great. So I'm doing this work to it. I don't know how this thing is running. And I get done with all the cleaning and I'm thinking to myself, this thing is not running any faster than it was when I got it.
Right.
And I was very disappointed. So I gave it back to the lady. I said, okay, I cleaned this up, did this, that, and the other. But I don't think it's any faster. I mean, I did my best, just let me know how it works out. So I talked to her a week later and she said, well, it's not freezing on me anymore. She said, it's working like I want it to. She said, it's not any faster, but it's not freezing on me. So, the moral of that story is sometimes you don't see the results of your efforts, but you still, even cleaning stuff, it never hurts to clean things up. And
yeah, you know what also that says to me is your expectation is sometimes different than the customer's expectation. See, I found in my shop, I was always trying to do more than they actually wanted. Sometimes it would take a little longer to do the job because I was trying to do it the way I thought they wanted it. And they go, I'd call them and they'd be like, well, I just wanted this done, really. Yeah, expectations could get mixed up a little bit, but that's, you got a good point there.
Yeah, exactly. So that worked out pretty good. So
good. Now I want to take a minute now and talk about our new sponsor, Super Anti-Spyware. If anybody out there is not using Super Anti-Spyware, you should definitely use it. This is one of the tools that we used in my computer repair business on a daily basis. Super Anti-Spyware is just what the name says. It's an anti-spyware. the creator of Super Anti-Spyware, Nick Skreptis, has been on Podnuts twice. And some of you guys have said that's the best Podnuts episode that they've ever heard. So if you haven't listened to that, definitely go check out what Nick has to say. In the meantime, download your free copy of Super Anti-Spyware. Just go to superantispyware.com, test it out yourself, and see if you like it. The free version's great, but you have to run it manually. There's a pro version, which gives the ability to schedule a scan. There's real-time protection, automatic definition updates. They update their database 3 to 10 times daily, so having those updates is a must. Super Anti-Spyware has a reseller program. There's no costs, obligations, minimum orders, or inventory requirements. And what it allows you to do is buy Super Anti-Spyware in bulk for a killer discount. Now, obviously, the more you buy, the more you're going to save. And what you need to do is buy Super Anti-Spyware, and when you clean out a customer's computer, and maybe you even use Super Anti-Spyware to do this, sell them a copy of the pro version of Super Anti-Spyware. This is a benefit. This is something that they need. This program will run in the background. It's not intrusive, and it will stop spyware from infecting their machine. Now, I bet most of you guys are selling antivirus. Super Anti-Spyware works in conjunction with the antivirus program. So you run an antivirus, you run Super Anti-Spyware, you have like a 1-2 punch and could really help a customer out. If you want to find out more about the reseller program, you can contact Mike Duncan at Super Anti-Spyware. You can give him a call on the phone. His phone number is 541-607-6553, extension 111. We're going to put that in the show notes if you can't write that down right now at podnuts.com. You can email him at mike.duncan@superantispyware.com. That's D-U-N-C-A-N. Or you can just go to superantispyware.com. It's listed under the reseller program. You get more information there. When you contact Mike, tell him you heard about this on Podnuts, and he will give you a special offer. I want to thank Super Anti-Spyware for being a sponsor for Podnuts. And now back to the show.
So that's a couple that I've done on the side. Now I'm going to start with some of the stuff that I run into in my company.
Sure.
Now, what we use in our locations, we basically use a client server setup. You know, right now we're using, we've actually gotten into a VM setup where we run an XP on the host and then a server 2003 on a VM. And it's a pretty sweet little setup. And I'm still learning a lot about that. But some of the simple things I run into, we have credit card swipes. Now, these credit card swipes plug into the PS2 port where the keyboard plugs in.
Right.
And what I run into a lot of times is that people at the store level will be cleaning or whatever, and they'll unplug something, and they'll plug it into the mouse port and wonder why it doesn't work. And it's I try to explain to them, all a credit card swipe is another way to input data. That's what keyboards are, is a way to input data. And they just never get it. And then we also have touchscreens, which you see in a lot of restaurants.
Right.
And now, the thing you run into with a touchscreen is that a touchscreen has a membrane that's on top of the monitor itself.
Right.
All a touchscreen is an input device. And I'll get calls from people saying, well, you know, touchscreen quit working. I got the mouse out, but the arrow is sticking. I can't get the mouse arrow. Every time I move it, it pops back. And I tell them, I said, okay, track your touchscreen data cable down to the computer, unplug it, your mouse will work.
Right.
And they're going, wow, how does that work? And what it is sometimes those touchscreen membranes will stick for whatever reason. I don't understand the technology behind it or anything like that. But they'll stick, and it's almost like you got two mice that are competing with each other.
I see.
To move that arrow. So you've got to unplug one of them pointing devices in order to make everything work.
And then you got to get the touchscreen repaired because that's the problem.
Yeah, that's the problem, but okay. At least with a mouse, they can use it until we can get the touchscreen
repaired. Right. The ones I've used, it's just USB, that touchscreen.
Yes.
The video part is, you know, VGA or DVI, but the touch part of the touchscreen is just a USB cable to the screen.
Yeah, some of them I've got are also serial cables.
Okay, gotcha.
So, because we're still using some legacy stuff with running Windows 2000 on workstations.
Right.
So.
Good tip, though.
So, anyway, yeah. And we had a discussion recently about how to clean a monitor. And I'm on a conference call, and we're told don't use any harsh chemicals. Don't right. use ammonia, which I knew that, and don't use rubbing alcohol.
Right.
And I thought, why not? I use rubbing alcohol all the time.
Right.
And they're like, well, it's very harsh. Okay, what do you suggest I use? Well, go get some wipes from the store. Well, I wear a pair of glasses that have coatings on them and everything. And, and you know, my glasses people, they said, well, just get you some rubbing alcohol, half and half with distilled water. That'll be fine. And I'm thinking, okay, for these glasses, if that'll work, it should work on a monitor.
Right.
And the people I'm talking to said, no, it doesn't work. Okay. So I do some research and we're still up in the air about it, but I'm holding a bottle of LCD cleaning wipes that I bought from a place called Altex, which is a Texas based computer parts chain.
Right.
And I look on there and the active ingredient is isopropanol. Now I'm not a chemist, but, my understanding is that isopropyl alcohol is 70% isopropanol or something like that. So as far as I can tell, rubbing alcohol, half and half distilled water is fine.
You know, a lot of, I think so too, but a lot of wipes now, if you read them, the newer ones, they say no alcohol and they actually kind of suck now, but, yeah. And it's funny you mentioned that our last guest, Jorge, who I just released the show in Podnuts Daily, he talked about cleaning monitors too. And he said he's been using Windex for years and will continue to do so. He's never, ever had a problem.
And, you know, I've got a local company, guy's name is Buck. He's with Monitor Depot in the Houston area. And he's told me the same thing. He said, don't leave it on there very long, but he's been repairing monitors for 20 years or better. And he told me the same thing.
Really? Interesting. Yeah. I'm still afraid. Like, I won't put that on my MacBook. I mean, I just won't, because unless somebody could give me like conclusive evidence, it won't damage it. I think I just drank the Kool-Aid on that one.
I think so too, but I will, you know, one thing that does occur to me about that is, I tell my people at the store level, before you go use the touch screens, go up to your hand sanitizer. You have to have hand sanitizer because we're working with food. So they have to have ways to sanitize their hand. Mm-hmm. And I tell them before they use the touchscreen, sanitize their hands again, because what that will do is that will help dissipate some of the body oils and you won't get as many fingerprints on the touchscreens.
Good one.
It'll stay cleaner. So now it is kind of funny though. I will walk into an office at one of our locations, which is just an LCD, and I'll see fingerprints all over it. It's funny. They'll try to take orders in the office and, oh, this is not touchscreen.
That's so funny.
So that's just some maintenance tips. Now, going on to my next one on my list, we're using IBM equipment, and I'm specifically talking about the model 8183, and they've got a bad problem with caps blowing.
Mm-hmm.
And we're still using Windows 2000 on those. And I've got a vendor that was selling me refurbished ones. And they told me one day, I said, well, we just get them from eBay when we need extra equipment. And I'm thinking to myself, well, I can do the same darn thing.
Right.
So I started getting them from eBay, about $50 a piece, you know, for a P4, you know, 512 meg memory. All I need to do is put a hard drive in it. So, and this was great. It used the same holder and stuff. I pop the hard drive out of the affected one, put a new hard drive in it. But I ran into a strange situation with the NIC. Now, the way our POS system is set up, we assign numbers for the clients, and we use the convention CL0 whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And we have anywhere between 5 and 9 clients per location.
Okay.
And each one has a specific IP address that is assigned to it. So I stick the hard drive in, launch it, and it says, okay, I find a new NIC, because on these newer ones that I'm buying off of eBay, they're using a slightly different NIC than what's on board on the old ones. So, okay, I install the drivers, no problem. I try to put the IP address in there. It won't take it. It says this IP address is in use somewhere else. How can it be? So I go to, you know, device manager. I can't see the other NIC. Try it again. It won't work. And first time I saw it, I'm just very perplexed. Why can I not put this IP address in?
Right.
Do a little Google research, and I discovered that if, you know, and it could be a NIC, it could be a audio device, it could be anything. But if you have that driver installed and it doesn't see it, the information is still installed. It is still in the registry, but you can't see it normally.
Okay.
And so I had to do some research, and I found a set command that you have to do in Windows. And basically what it is, the command is set space DEV MGR device manager underscore show underscore non-present underscore devices equals 1. Basically you're telling it, if you've installed a, a device and it is not present in the system, you still need to show it. So I have to set that to show it. Then I have to go into device manager. And then once you're in device manager, I have to tell it to show hidden devices. Then I can remove the old NIC. Then I can put the proper IP address in.
Really? You can't just remove the old NIC and reboot the machine?
No, it will stay in the memory.
Wow. No, I did not know that.
Yeah. And that's something people don't think about, because if you, you know, in most cases, if you remove a NIC, reboot it, put a new NIC in, you're doing DHCP on your network. But because I have to put a specific IP for that workstation, you know, I have to remove that NIC in order for that to work.
Wow, that's weird. So you have to, where do you run that? From the command line?
Yeah, that's what you do. Actually, what I did is I wrote a batch file.
Okay.
So I wouldn't have to remember it every time. I wrote a batch file, put that command in, and then the next line I put, you know, open up device manager. So I wouldn't have to remember it every time. So
that's a great tip. That may be perplexing many people out there.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, but I'm also sure it's not that common, because, like I said, it's not often that you have to set the specific IP.
Right. Exactly.
So anyway,
good one.
I got one more for you.
Sure.
And this one is when I had to take a broadband device for a Sunday drive to fix it.
Okay. Sounds like a name of a comedy movie with Steve Carell.
But yeah, it's what it sounds like. So, and this one's going to be a little bit lengthy.
Okay.
When we put broadband in all of our locations, you know, our preference was to either get DSL or cable, but we had some locations that we could not get either one. And so our IBM came up with a way to put something called an EVDO device in it. Mm-hmm. And for those that don't know, EVDO basically use cell phone towers to communicate, you know, with the internet. Now, right. These devices are designed to be used in trucks, in, you know, 18 wheelers. They can be put on the dashboards. They're very durable, and they work for what they do. They work fairly well. So I had four locations that have these devices in them. And then we have a Cisco router, Cisco 871, that creates the virtual private network that we use to communicate with the home ship. Or mothership, however you want to put it,
right.
And you know, do what it has to do. So I get a call from this location. You know, we can't connect. So, you know, after troubleshooting on the phone, I figure I have to go to the location. So I go to the location. I get on the phone with the VPN vendor, or actually the management company, and I'm working with them, and we're going through different troubleshooting tips. And I'm looking at the device. I said, this device is connected. And I even hooked my laptop into the device. I'm able to get to the internet. Mm-hmm. I am able to download a file from the internet using this device.
Right.
So I can use to test the device to make sure the device is working. But yet I plugged the Cisco router back in. I can't make it work. I hooked up a modem to the Cisco router. The vendor hooked into the Cisco router. They said, everything's set fine. It's got to be with the EVDO device. I'm like, no, it's got to be with your router. So we're going back and forth, and we're not making any progress. So, you know, I finally said, okay, we'll get with the provider for the EVDO service. But this was on a Saturday. I wouldn't be able to get with them till Monday. So next morning, Sunday morning, as luck would have it, I decided, okay, I've got another location 70 miles away. And okay. I decided, what do I got to lose? So I picked up the Cisco router and the EVDO device.
Right.
And took them over there. And I decided, okay, I'm going to hook bad to good, good to bad, in every combination I could think of. And I'm going to prove to them that it is their Cisco router and not my EVDO.
Right.
So I get to the location, I get there before they open, and I take down the good EVDO device. I put the bad EVDO device in, which I knew was good. Everything came back online. Okay. So I know it's not my EVDO device. So I put the original back in. I pulled the Cisco router down. I put the bad Cisco router up there. It came up. I'm like, damn.
Right.
So I put the bad Cisco router and the bad EVDO device up there, and it came up.
Weird.
Okay, so I put the good back. I bring both bads. I drive 70 miles back, put them in the location. It came up.
This is good.
Yeah, I'm like, how in the world is this happening? And I don't know for sure, but I have a theory on it. Remember I told you this is designed for long haul trucks.
Right.
Okay. They're going to go from tower to tower to tower.
Right.
Every time they hit a new tower, they're going to have to re-authenticate.
Okay.
I'm thinking what happened was by taking that EVDO device, it had to re-authenticate on another tower. There might have been something on its home tower that hung it up, an ARF table that was hung up, IP address that was hung up or not working right, whatever. And by me taking it on a Sunday drive to another tower, it broke that connection, re-authenticated a new location. I brought it back to the original location. It re-authenticated there. Everything worked fine.
Moral of the story, take the EVDO or EVDO out for a drive, buy it lunch.
Yeah. And maybe a drink.
And it will work just fine.
It will work just fine. But that is some examples of some of the things I run into in my job that are a little different than the normal tech runs into.
Yeah, these are great. These are great tips. And especially, you know, the EVDO thing applies because people are using Verizon cards now. And that's not EVDO. I think Sprint is on EVDO. But
no, Verizon has EVDO as well.
Oh, they do? Yes. Okay. So, yeah, that's going to apply to like their mobile cards, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So they could have that issue, but if they're moving enough, they probably won't be as likely to have the issue.
Right.
You know, because my devices were staying in the same place using the same tower all the time. And I even power cycled at the original location.
I was going to ask you that too.
We must have power cycled 100 times. It seemed like probably not that many, but it seemed like it. So, you know, I got one more. I had a team member who got in trouble because he got a lot of spyware on his computer. It got cleaned up and he was warned, don't do it again. Okay.
Right.
So he gives me a call and he says, man, I can log in to my computer, but then I have to hold a key down for several seconds before I can, you know, it's like hold a key down, lift it, hold a key down, lift it, hold a key down, lift it. And he said, man, it's infected again. Help me. Okay. So I went and got it and I ran the scans, couldn't find anything.
You wait, when you say hold a key down, like to type anything, you mean?
Yeah. So you hold the M.
All right.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 release it would take.
Gotcha.
You know. And what I discovered is there is a Windows shortcut key that will enable sticky keys.
Now what are sticky keys again?
Sticky keys are keys that you have. So if you have mobility problems,
right,
it's an accessibility option. And if you know if your fingers move really slow, you know, and you need, you know, I don't quite understand how anybody would use sticky keys, but it's one of those accessibility options that help people that have a handicap that may not be able to type as fast as you and I can.
I've seen the menu option. I never activated it. This is interesting, though.
Yeah. So if you hold down, let's see, what are the settings? The shortcut for sticky keys, if you press the shift key 5 times, it will enable sticky keys. So I asked my friend, I said, do you have a cat? He said, yeah, I do. I said, I bet your cat went across that keyboard a couple of times trying to get your attention and press the shift key a few times.
Oh, maybe he did, just trying to get it to work, just slam it on the shift key or something.
He might have. You never know. And so I went into the control panel to accessibility options, and I turned off sticky keys. I turned off filter keys. I turned off toggle keys. You know, turn it off in the control panel. That way you don't sit there and hit the shift key 5 times. And enable sticky keys.
And that fixed it?
That fixed it.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Of course, you know who our best friend is in the industry, don't you?
Who, LimeWire?
Mr. Google.
Oh.
Where do you think I get all this?
Of course. Well, that you figured that out from Google, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, good one.
No, LimeWire is our friend for getting us more business.
Right. Even though I don't consider it a friend.
No.
It's like we're always cleaning up after it and people are paying us.
Yes, I would agree with that. So that's what I got. I hope I was able to provide something that your listeners can take and use.
I think it was great. It was awesome.
Good.
Stay on the line. We'll do some emails.
Sounds good.
If the line still stays up for you, let's put it that. All right, let me pull up my Gmail here. This will probably crash everything. No, I'm just kidding.
There you go.
Okay, this is from Joaquin. He says, I just fixed my Acer DC jack connector, exactly like the one on the video. And he's talking about the laptop repair videos at laptoprepairvideos.com. He said, your videos are great. Thank you for your service. But my concern today is I've been wondering what to fix when you plug in your laptop power cord, but it doesn't turn on. It only flashes an amber light. When I have this problem, I used to take it to a colleague of mine to fix it. And he does. I don't have a laptop to repair today. Oh, okay. But I don't know what to do when this happens again. Can you help me, please? Okay. Now, different computers have different error codes and different ways of saying that something's wrong. Like some, if the motherboard's fried or something's wrong, you press the power button, maybe the light will blink amber 5 times, you know, like especially with Dell Inspiron 5150s, 5100s, 1100s, and 1150s, I would always get random amber light type problems. You know, he doesn't say what kind of... Oh, actually, he does say it's an Acer. But he doesn't say what model Acer. That's happened to me with Dells, and usually that's just a bad motherboard. It's not usually power jack or power related. Sometimes on Dells also, and I know you said Acer, but I'm just trying to throw out everything I know. Sometimes on Dells, when you press the power button and you get your caps light blinks about 10 times, that's usually bad RAM. So probably the safest thing to do is use Google, your friend, like you said, and check to see what the error codes are for that computer. Maybe it'll tell you right in the documentation what's wrong with that thing. Most of the time, for me, it's usually a bad motherboard when you hit the power and nothing happens. But, hey, it could be a processor, could be RAM, could be a wireless card, could be a multitude of things. So that's what to look for when that happens. He also – do you want to add anything to that so far, Jim?
You got it.
Okay. Another thing he asks is, I wonder about BIOS passwords too. When the battery fails to remove the password, what chip do I use to short-circuit it? Thank you in advance. Okay, so, you know, you don't hardly ever have to short-circuit a chip to get rid of the BIOS password. There are some Dells that are famous for, I think it's a hard drive password. No, I think it might actually be a BIOS password. And there is an EEPROM chip that you have to short out. I've done it with a paperclip and it works. Like I said, it's different for every machine. Most of the times when you take out the CMOS battery, you will get rid of the BIOS password. But you can't just pop the CMOS battery out and pop it back in 2 seconds later sometimes. Sometimes you got to pop the CMOS battery out. And you got to make sure that the AC adapter is also unplugged on the machine. And also your real battery is out of the laptop. And while the CMOS battery is out and it's getting no power, hit the power button for about 10 seconds and make sure the motherboard's discharged. You know, that still might not do it. Some people say you have to remove the CMOS battery for 24 hours. So those are the things I would try immediately. And if that's not working, just leave it out for a day and see what happens. Usually in most cases, you're going to reset the BIOS password that way.
You know, I think a lot of people don't realize that the way I explain it is that batteries are capacitors, but capacitors aren't necessarily batteries. But what they both do is hold a power charge.
Right.
And so you're right on track with that. You got to give all those capacitors time to drain down.
Right.
And do that. And as far as the Dells go, Dells actually have a hard drive password as well as a CMOS or BIOS password. And you set that in the BIOS.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. I remember that. I couldn't remember. They call it like a white screen of death. It's that white one that says Dell Security System or something like that.
Yeah. I set that on a laptop a lot of times.
Okay.
You know, I don't do it on a desktop, but I will on a laptop because if it's stolen and they got that password set, it's going to be hard for somebody to get into it.
Right. It is hard. And removing the CMOS battery does not, I don't think that handles that.
No, because it's stored on the actual hard drive.
Okay. That's right. So, but you can do it with shorting out this chip. There's a tutorial on it somewhere online. You use Google. That's how I found that.
That's exactly right. So,
okay. Thanks, Jim, on that one. Let's see what else we got here. This is from Tom. He says, I received a Dell Inspiron 6400 for doing some work for somebody. He puts this in parentheses. I help people who can afford repairs at no cost and sometimes get broken computers in trade. End parentheses. It looks like it had been dropped, and apparently someone tried to work on it because some of the screws are missing and the bezel doesn't fit correctly. It appears to work fine except for a few things. It boots up and it enters Windows XP fine, but after about 15 seconds, the display goes blank. If I switch to an external monitor, it works fine. If I switch between the external monitor and the internal display, the display turns off for about 15 seconds. So it appears that the display works, but something is turning it off after 15 seconds or so. I have checked the power settings, disabled the screen off when lid is closed, and turned off screensaver, but nothing seemed to help. Any suggestions before I take it apart? I've never taken apart a laptop completely, so I'm reluctant to do that. Tom, I answered an email for this, and I'm going to actually put something before the solution I told you in the email. I would try this with a Linux distribution. Throw in a Linux CD or even the Ultimate Boot CD. Any bootable CD, try it with that first. We got to determine whether this is a software or a hardware problem. If this is a Windows problem, then you're okay. You don't have to take anything apart. But if this is also happening with your Linux distributions, then yeah, there's definitely something funky going on with the screen. What I talked about in the answer to your email was it could be a damaged inverter. It could be a damaged bulb. I mean, it's like, do you ever turn on a fluorescent light and it stays on for a couple seconds and then turns off? That's the way these laptop monitor bulbs are. They're just fluorescent bulbs, or they used to be before they went to LEDs. But most of them still, the older ones, are fluorescent bulbs. So it could be a wonky bulb. It could be the inverter, which is like the inverter is basically like the ballast in a fluorescent light. It could be that the circuitry in that's messed up. And then, you know, short of that and a bad cable, you're looking at probably a motherboard problem. Something on the circuitry of the motherboard is sending a signal to the screen to turn off.
Yeah, it sounds like similar behavior that I'll see in just a regular monitor. Sometimes you'll see a flat panel monitor, especially the touchscreens that I've got, will come on for just a few seconds and go off. So when you were reading the email, I thought hardware first all the way.
Yeah, I thought so too when I answered the email. But then after reading it twice, he says it boots up and enters Windows XP fine. Now, to enter Windows XP, that takes longer than 15 seconds. So yeah, if that monitor's staying on for longer than 15 seconds during the boot up process, then it might be software.
Good point. Yeah, I didn't catch that when you read it the first time.
Yeah, the first time I read it, I thought hardware all the way. But who knows? Could be one or the other.
That's why you should read things all the way through a couple of times. I've gotten bit several times in our SIG reading a question thinking, oh, yeah, I know this. And then proved that I don't.
I know. I do that with emails all the time. I feel bad. All right, this last one's from Jorge. He says, hey, Steve, not sure if people know about Google Places. It simply allows your business to be found on local search results on both Google Search and Google Maps. You can add photos, comments, hours of operation, etc. Yes, it's free. It's at google.com/places. Now, this is a really, really smart thing to do if you have a business, a computer repair business or whatever, and you just want some free publicity. Go to Google Places and enter your information like right this minute. Put in pictures of your shop. Put in a picture of you fixing a computer if you don't have a shop. People like to see a real person in the websites and the pictures. That's why the way I have it set up in the Tech Site Builder kit. They want to see a person who's actually doing work, who, not just a fake picture of a girl on a headset saying, we can help you. So put your photos in there, whatever photos you think will help. Put your hours of operation, put any comments in there, write up a good little thing for your business. And it also helps with Google AdWords. If you actually set up a Google AdWords account, it will use the information in your Google Places. I believe this is what it used to do. It will use information in Google Places, and it'll give you the option of having that show up in your ads. Your ads will be even better. So the great suggestion from Jorge. If you haven't listened to the last episode of Podnuts Daily with Jorge, listen to that. He's got other great tips as well. Anything to add on that one, Jim?
Nothing to add on to that one as far as the specific email, but one thing that I remember a colleague of mine telling me several years ago, the contractor that I use, he said, you know, it's not about whether you're doing air conditioner work or computers or selling, food or whatever. It's about the relationships you make with your customers. And, when you had your shop, I could tell you had great relationships with your customer. I'm sure Door-to-Door Geek does. I know Mike Smith does. I think a lot of times we were, techs sometimes worry too much about the tech part of it. And we don't worry enough about the customer you know, themselves. I remember, you know, remember recently hearing about Steve D'Amico and his, that lady that was psycho, I guess would be a way to put it.
I think it was Timster. Was it Timster?
I thought it was Steve D.
Okay. Might have been.
Well, maybe it was Timster.
I think they both had similar.
Oh, did they both have one?
Yeah.
But I mean, sometimes you got to take it a little bit further and, you know, take a gamble here and there with a customer. You never know how it's going to work out. And, you know, you may be the only person that they have that they can, you know, that they can trust. You know, I remember the mother of three of my granddaughters. I stopped by to see her one day, and she was telling me about this problem she had with one of her office computers. And the guy had come in, replaced the hard drive, the motherboard, and sold them a new copy of Windows XP. Her dad and I both independently of each other concluded that it was a power supply issue because she was still having the same problem.
Oh, man.
And she said, but I got to use this guy. I said, why do you have to use this guy? Well, he wrote the software, a very specific software package that they used in their business. And so they were stuck with him. And I'm thinking, my God, that must be a heck of a gig to, you know, have guaranteed business, even though you don't know what you're doing.
I know, man. There's also so many businesses that you go in there and their tech, like their IT department is just whacked. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And they still use them. These guys, there's a lot of hacks out there that really lock themselves into a company and really, you know, like with their contracts or whatever, really lock these people in.
Yeah.
But, you know, your original point is super, super valid. I've talked about this a lot. You really, if you give good customer service, you're in. I mean, you really are in. And most of the time, if you give good customer service, that means you're a good person. So you're really going to try hard to fix their problems. These customers see that. They see when you really put an effort in. And just you trying hard is good customer service.
And be honest with your customers, you know, be upfront with them.
Yeah.
You know, don't, you know, and I've heard some people say, well, try to fix it. Well, you know, sometimes you're not going to be able to. I'll be honest with you. I don't think I'll ever take apart a laptop. I don't have the eyesight for it. And more importantly, I don't have the patience for it,
okay.
You know, but that's your thing. You know, right. you're very good with laptops. You know, that's not my thing. That's not Mike Smith's thing, you know, and he's not going to try to take apart a laptop. He's going to call you.
That's right. He's sad I'm leaving, actually, because of that reason. But everybody's different. I get great pleasure taking apart laptops. I don't know what it is. But it all comes back to a great tip for if you're going to start a business or thinking about doing a business, give customer service and you're in. I mean, it's one of the main things you could do right now that's going to put you like head and shoulders above the rest of the competition because guys just aren't doing it. So if you are that one guy that does it, you will have success, I believe.
I believe you will.
Jim, you want to add anything else before we end off? Anything you want to close out on?
I think we're good. I think we're good. I appreciate the opportunity to be on your show.
Absolutely. I appreciate you coming on the show. Let me just make a couple quick announcements here. If you do want to come on the show again, Jim, which I hope you do, and anybody else who wants to come on the show, I recently updated podnuts.com/guests. That's all you got to do is go to that website, sign up for an episode of Podnuts Daily. I'm also looking for some people to do the Great Tech Debate, which is a fun show that we haven't done in a month on Saturdays where we each bring a debate topic to the table and we talk, we argue about it, fight about it, cry about it, and we just have fun on debating about tech. If it's about tech, it's always a good time. And so that's on the sign-up sheet as well. Anybody can sign up for that. If you want to leave a voicemail to Podnuts Daily, I have a new number. It's the Google Voice, my Google Voice number. It's 7076-PODNUT. Make a note of that. That's the new number. The old one still will work, but I'm not going to really be using that as much anymore. I'm going to phase it out. This is closer, 7076-PODNUT. Call that number, leave a message, and I'll play it on the show. All right, Jim, thanks again for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, and you have a good one. Good luck on your move.
Thanks very much. I hope to talk to you soon. And for everybody else out there, see you next time. Music for Podnuts Daily has been provided by Evan King at purevolume.com/Evan King.